Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gaddis Jewelers.
Genuine diamonds, baby.
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 8:04 the time, hour number two here on Sports 56 Mornings. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, Jay Hamm with you on this Wednesday, April 29th, 2026, broadcasting live and local from the Family Leisure Studios. Family Leisure at 2120 Witten Road, just north of I-40. They have their hot tub and swim spa expo going on now through May 10th. Currently 65 degrees, very cloudy out there, and there's still a chance we could get a shower or two this morning into the early afternoon before things clear out. We had a lot of damaging storms yesterday. Hopefully you're okay wherever you reside. Tomorrow looks to be very nice. Friday, cloudy with a 25% chance of rain. And the temperatures will drop a bit. We're talking upper 60s for tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, and then should hit 70 on Sunday. Travis Burke joins us here in just 1 second. Do want to tell you about James Gaddis Jewelers, our second hour sponsor. They are at 4900 Poplar between Mendenhall and St. Nick, and on the web at GaddisJewelers.com. If you are planning to get hitched sometime this year, make sure you head over to James Gaddis Jewelers to check out all those beautiful diamond engagement rings, wedding rings, personally designed wedding sets. They are your bridal and engagement and anniversary jeweler headquarters and been so for 60 years. They are full-service jewelers with two bench jewelers ready to serve you daily, and it's more than just those beautiful diamond engagement rings and all the wedding rings. It's also all types of jewelry like watches and earrings and necklaces and bracelets and pendants and on and on. James Gaddis Jewelers, Monday through Friday, they're open 10 to 5, Saturday 10 to 4, closed on Sunday. Check them out at 4900 Poplar between Mendenhall and St. Nick and on the web at GaddisJewelers.com. Memphis certainly excited about what they heard on Saturday in the fourth round. The 17th overall pick of the Los Angeles Chargers won Travis Burke, the left tackle from the University of Memphis and now an NFL offensive lineman. And he joins us now on Sports 56 Mornings. Travis, congratulations. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
So give us the whole rundown on Saturday, where you were, how you were contacted, and just the whole reaction. And did you have an inkling that maybe the Chargers were going to take you?
It was just, you know, a life-changing feeling. My heart kind of, like, dropped. I was at Airbnb in Fort Lauderdale with my family, and we were all just sitting there, and it was getting, like, early day three, and it just, like, I felt my pocket vibrate, and I just heard Coach Harbaugh and the whole coaching staff back there celebrating and stuff, happy to have me. But I, to be honest, had a feeling it was going to be a far team because I just didn't know the Chargers, but they did show a lot of signs. The scout had told me I was a top 55 tackle, and Harbaugh talked to me at the combine, so.
Oh, he did talk to you there at the combine, so thought maybe the Chargers. So you thought at first one of the Miami, Tampa Bay, Jacksonville, somebody would take you from Florida?
I didn't think it was going to be a Florida team. I just figured it was going to be out of state.
Oh, okay.
And it was going to be far.
So you kind of answered because you said it was you felt your pocket. I would think as you're sitting there, you would have that you'd just be staring at your phone. Like, what are you doing during that time to try and relax or whatever, waiting for that call to come?
I just kept pacing around the house eating food. I couldn't look at my phone.
What was the snacks of choice to keep you occupied?
My girlfriend ordered a pizza and wings for the house. So we had pizza wings, some garlic bread, some leftover Colombian Dominican food in the fridge. So
nice.
I had a variety of options.
There's two things I would be concerned with if I was a player about to be drafted in the NFL. One, that my phone was charged to capacity. I can't imagine, like, if you were down low with the charge and all of a sudden the phone goes out. And two, take it a little bit easy with the food because although I guess you could take a call while you're doing your business in the bathroom, I don't want to be there when I'm getting a call from an NFL head coach. But what exactly did Jim? Because Jim Harbaugh is known as a pretty reserved, quiet guy on like when he's talking. But we know how revved up of a coach he can be. He's very animated. But when he talks to people, he seems to be short on words and very to the point. What did he say to you exactly, Travis?
He was just super excited for me. He asked what I was doing, and he was like, let me see the fam. And then he was just super excited, and he was celebrating, and he FaceTimed me, showed me the whole staff, and he was just telling me how they were all there and happy to have me and excited to get to work.
So since your season ended, what have you been doing? What has been the process to get ready for the draft and now ready for your NFL career?
Well, since the end of the season, I've obviously had to maintain the ankle injury because I had fractured my ankle in November. So trying to get that whole process of recovering my ankle and staying in shape and, like, just getting back in the football groove before the combine, that was really the main thing. So just making sure my ankle was fully healed before the draft, and, you know, Bomberitos took care of my ankle as well as Memphis did before I had left back to Florida. And then I was just able to thankfully be fully recovered before the draft.
Oh, wow. So the ankle's 100% right now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so what is this? When do the rookie mini camp start and then OTAs? What's the schedule look like moving forward now?
All I know is that on May 6th, I have to head up there for rookie mini camp.
Okay, and I assume they take care of all the travel and get you all set up, and so you get there on their dime. They're taking care of all that, and it makes it pretty easy for you to get there, right? You don't have to set up and make arrangements yourself.
Yes, sir.
So that's a week from today. So a week from today, you'll be there. Yep. How long are you there for then?
I think it's like June 27th, I think.
Okay.
Before whatever happens next.
So have you, after they draft you, you know you're going there, are you like immediately looking at like what they've got on the offensive line, how you might fit in, all that stuff? Or how do you kind of look at that as to where you might fit in?
Yeah, I've looked at the roster and who they have. You know, I'm just excited to go in there, and it's a new culture for myself and just to work with some of the veteran guys there. And to learn from the coaches, it's just exciting, and it'll be fun.
Do you happen to know anybody by chance, maybe from other stops in your collegiate career, that's actually on the Chargers team or any of the coaches? Have you had any kind of relationship with any of those people in that organization?
Well, I know Greg will be there.
Yeah, Dwosia. Yeah, so he was an undrafted free agent, correct?
Yes, sir.
Anybody else? There.
And then one of the tight ends at the Chargers, Aronde Gadsden, I know him.
Okay.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yep. We played Little League football together.
Oh, wow.
Did you really?
Well, that's somebody that's somebody to lean on. That's extremely important. You got your buddy from the University of Memphis in Dwosia, and then you got a veteran who can help you with what goes on as a pro, because you got to learn how to be a professional, right?
Right. Yes, sir.
Being from Florida, were you happy that it's a warm weather place you're going to?
Yes. I'm glad it's a warm weather place.
Were you were dodging calls from like Buffalo was on the clock? Like, please don't call. Please don't
Green
call.
Bay. Green Bay. On the line for Travis.
No. Ignore that call. Ignore.
Nah. I would never do that for weather. Memphis was cold, but I love my hot weather.
Well, compared to everywhere, I think. Compared
of course.
To, right, everything's cold, but obviously it gets hot in Memphis. But speaking of Memphis, you came here to the University of Memphis. You were at, Gardner-Webb, Florida International. What was the experience like playing at the University of Memphis?
It was different. I would say, my whole college career, I've been in and out of different schools and different cultures, different locker rooms, different coaching staffs. And I feel like Memphis specifically, just their coaching staff, their culture in the locker room, like, I think Coach Silverfield did a really good job with all the kids in there, because, whether win or loss, those kids were so passionate about football. Like, we all enjoyed coming to work every day and to get better and just to listen to what all of our coaches had to say next leading into the next day. And it was just a good experience, you know, with the whole O-line room, Coach Deal, Coach Myers, just the way they bought into us and did everything they could to advance our technique and always finding ways to get us better.
At the NFL level, do you believe you'll be a right tackle like you were in college?
I think I'll be a swing tackle, so I'm just
okay.
Looking to wherever they want to put me.
So you're listed at 6'9", 325. You can't do anything about the height. The height stays at 6'9", but what about the weight? Do you need... I mean, to me, that's big. And you're pretty quick, too. So you're quick for a big guy, but you think you're going to need to put on a little more weight, take off a little? And, like, what's your situation as far as weight is concerned?
Well, the things that they see on the weight, they actually don't know how much I weigh because right now I'm 6'9", 340, so...
Well, that was after all the pizza, right, the other day?
No, not from all the pizza. That's from before the pizza, the eating good.
The eating good, you were 340, right?
Yeah, the pizza probably just added on, but.
So you think 340 is a good weight? You feel comfortable with that?
Yes, sir. I was at, when I did the pro day, I was 332.
Okay.
Were you, when you did pro day with the numbers, the things that you did, were you at that point happy with what you did and thought you put yourself in a good spot? Or were you like afterward thinking, man, I wish I would have done this a little bit better or whatever?
Obviously, there were some things on the field that I had wished I did a little better, but I was just grateful for the opportunity and I was happy with what I did.
So at the combine, were you healthy and were you working out at the combine or just doing interviews?
No, I was doing everything at the combine. I ran the 40, I ran the O-line drills, and then that was all I did there.
And as far as did you talk with all the teams, just a few of the teams? How did that go?
I probably did talk to all the teams, minus maybe a few, but I had like four formal meetings, and then they had the informals, so... When I was down there at the informals, it was like teams were grabbing me like left and right. It felt like.
Now you go to. I was going to say San Diego. You go to Los Angeles with the Chargers. Justin Herbert, their quarterback, I'm sure a big fan of the NFL and now a player in the National Football League. I'm sure you kept close dibs on what was going on with the league while you were still playing at the University of Memphis. What do you think of a guy like Justin Herbert that he'll be your starting quarterback, of course, in Los Angeles. What about him that you like from what you've seen on television?
To be honest, I haven't really watched him, to be honest.
Okay.
I haven't really watched football too much. Like,
you don't watch NFL on Sundays? Don't you get you're usually at practice on Sundays, right? And then you have the day off on Monday when you're at Memphis, right?
Yeah, so I was usually, like, watching film on our next opponent or, like, watching film from our practices or I was taking care of my body in the training room. Like, I was never home watching Sunday football unless they had it on in the training room and
right.
I peeked by it. But
right. Maybe a Monday night game when you have a day off. That's a good point, man. That's a guy dedicated to his craft. But,
yeah.
Justin Herbert, one of those still very – still relatively young. I don't say very young, but still relatively young, big-armed quarterbacks that people are waiting for him to break out. Maybe he needs a little more protection, which you're gonna add to it, Travis.
Yes, sir.
How much did you know about Jim Harbaugh before, talking to him?
To be honest, not too much.
Really?
That's fine.
Not too much, to be honest. I just knew him and his brother are two –
yeah.
Really amazing coaches.
Yeah, just don't say anything about his khaki pants. You'll see a lot of khaki pants. That's his thing. That's his apparel. He's the pretty much you know what you're going to get with Harbaugh. But I mean, he has turned a lot of players into champions, whether it be at the collegiate level, the pro level. Really good coach. I'm very happy for you. People around here are extremely happy for you, representing Memphis as a fourth round pick in the NFL draft. He is Travis Burke. He will be playing for the Los Angeles Chargers, and we'll be rooting for you the entire way, Travis. Thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck out there in Los Angeles.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Take care. Soft-spoken guy who's 6'9", 340.
Small fella. Just a little tiny guy.
Yeah, they call him Tiny. That's his nickname.
I don't like some of the sizes of some of these offensive linemen. Again, we talk about Caden Proctor and... It's just, I don't even know how they grow human beings that big. It feels like it has to be in a lab.
Is anybody four bills in the league?
In the NFL right now? The big defensive lineman that went to Florida, I don't know if he's 400 or not. I'm not sure if he's actually in the NFL right now or not. But
how about Malachi? Who was the huge guy, the Jets? I don't know where he is now. The offensive lineman, Malachi.
Oh,
you know that monster?
The kid from Louisville.
Yes, yes. Gosh.
What? God, I can't think of his name. What did he play for this year? He played very well. I don't remember who he was with this year.
Well, everybody plays better once they get out of New York with the Jets. Let me see. Malachi. Tony. No, that's the receiver.
I can't think of his name.
Doesn't even come up. Anyway. Yeah, I was wondering if that guy's 400. Guy's an absolute monster.
I don't think there's any. I can't imagine there's any offensive linemen that are at 400 right now. I don't think any team. You just wouldn't be. They wouldn't want you at 400. You're just not going to be able to move good enough.
And I'll tell you one thing about Travis. He can move. I mean, the guy really can move for that size, which is incredible. So anyway.
But yeah, I cannot. I'm the kid from Louisville. I can't.
I'm looking hard.
I can't remember where he went when he left the Jets. I think they. I can't remember if they traded him or if they just let him go.
I think they let him go. If I'm not mistaken.
East Coast Wings and Grill. I know Travis Burke could go eat some wings. He just said, he told me he could do some damage over at East Coast Wings and Grill. He might be able to try every one of the 60 flavors in one sitting. He could probably do that at. At 6'9", 340, you can handle some wings. There's no doubt about that. East Coast Wings and Grill will have plenty to choose from. With, again, 60 different flavors, 7 different heat indexes. You can check them out at East Coast Wings and Grill. But beyond the wings, all kinds of other great items on the menu as well. From their great burgers to other sandwiches, salads, flatbreads like the Philly cheesesteak flatbread, which I love so much. All fresh, never frozen, delicious food over at East Coast Wings and Grill. Of course, plenty of drinks to choose from as well. And just a great place to go watch the games, whether it be the NBA playoffs or Major League Baseball or anything else that's on. They've got plenty of TVs for you to watch all of the actions. Mekhi Becton, by the way, is the kid's name.
Yes, yes. I was looking up
East Coast Wings and Grill, located in Bartlett, out off Highway 64 there in the Wolf Chase area. It's right between the Lowe's and the Walmart. Kate Hyde Boulevard is the one that runs right between those two, between Lowe's and Walmart. And that's where you will find East Coast Wings and Grill.
He's with the Chargers.
Is he? Okay, I couldn't remember.
They list him as 6'7 or 6'8 between 350 and 370. He's nicknamed Big Ticket. So, oh my gosh. I'm not saying that right off the bat Travis is going to walk in there and start. But can you imagine that size? And Becton plays, does he play left tackle? Anyway, could you imagine one left tackle at about 370, one right tackle at 340, and the heights on the guys, 169, 167.
And they already had a monster line with the Chargers anyway.
I don't know how you're going to get to Herbert, man. Now it's Herbert. Herbert has no excuses. He has to come through with all those guys protecting him. We'll take a timeout when we come back. An old friend, Aki Collins, will join us. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Not only can you listen to your favorite shows on Sports 56, you can also watch video of the shows live on Twitter and YouTube. Watch and listen every day
at Sports 56 WHBQ.
Now,
back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Isn't it a lovely morning?
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Rolling right along on a Wednesday. Happy hump day to everybody. 8:27 is the time. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, and Jay Ham with you. Little thing we call Sports 56 Mornings, and the hits just keep on coming. Our friend, it's been a long time, Coach Aki Collins will join us in just a second. But just to clarify things, Mekhi Becton, who was with the Chargers, released, you said, in March.
Yes.
So he's gone, and he wasn't even playing tackle. He was playing guard. They got Joe Alt from, what, Notre Dame? Where did Joe Alt come from? Starting left tackle, right? And then who's on the other side? Slater?
Rashawn Slater. They got two first.
Yeah, they got two great, top, great linemen.
First round picks at the two tackle
position. So Burke right is now going to learn from some great, great players. But as far as Becton is concerned, released again, he has been a flop. I mean, so far, to be honest with you. I mean, for a guy that size, you would think that he would stick and be a lot better, but he hasn't stuck with one team. I guess I got to take a little bit back from what I said to criticize the Jets, because it didn't work out apparently out in Los Angeles as well. As promised, it is time to talk some college basketball. I'm so excited to have Aki back on the program. He is now an assistant coach and the director of player personnel at my alma mater, the University of Maryland. You can follow Aki on Twitter at CoachAK40, the former Memphis Tiger assistant. Aki Collins joining us on the program. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing good. How's everything?
Man, it's fantastic. It's funny. I was looking up the resume, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. 2012 through 2015, you were in Memphis. 11 years ago, you left. It was like yesterday, Aki. We were just talking to you basically weekly on this program. 11 years have gone by. Time is flying.
And you're making me feel old, man. You're making me feel old, and it definitely is fun.
Well, you weren't old then, but maybe now. I don't know. I mean, this is absolutely crazy. From a personal standpoint, I mean, the life of a coach, it doesn't matter if you're in college, professional, whatever the sport may be. Man, oh, man, you have been in a number of places, and now at my alma mater, but you rekindle an old relationship as you're coaching under Buzz Williams, who took over last year. You guys were together in Marquette, in Milwaukee at Marquette.
Correct. So when I left, I went to the NBA, then went to New Mexico for about 4 months, then went with Micah Shrewsbury to Penn State. Mike and I worked together at Marshall. When he decided to go to Notre Dame, I figured, you know, the college basketball thing was enough. My kids were growing up, and they were still in Atlanta. So I went and I took over running Overtime Elite.
Right.
And I was comfortable down there, you know, down to 2 years. My boss lives in New York, so I live in Atlanta, so it's a great setup. And then I was in Maryland for an event, not this past November, the November before, and Coach was still at Texas A&M, and he calls me at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I look at my phone like, all right, why is Buzz calling me at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday? So I finally answer it, and he starts talking, and it speeds up into, hey, man, I need you to come to Texas A&M and be my GM. All right, Coach, we'll talk about it. And this is November, December. We talk one more time. He's like, hey, I think I may get the Texas job, you know, would that interest you? And in my mind, I had no interest in doing either one because I knew my kids were going to stay in Atlanta, and I didn't want to be further than an hour and a half away from them by flight. He gets the Maryland job. And everything kind of spun out from there. So it's been adventurous. We had a very rough season. I took the job in August, so the roster was already set. But I spent the entire year basically focusing on this portal season and high school recruiting. So I think we've done a pretty decent job so far.
You mentioned you were with the Thunder there for a while.
And now
being back into the college game. How close is today's college game to the NBA game with everything that's going on now in college basketball?
I think, and this is going to sound weird, but I think it's the NBA on steroids. and it was never supposed to be that. You know, at least in the NBA, when you're dealing with contracts and player acquisition, You know, you can lock guys in for 2 or 3, yeah, 4 or 5 years and not have to worry about it. And you can kind of build your roster from there because you know, all right, I got player A and player C locked in for multiple years. I just got to, you know, figure out what I'm doing with player B. Because of the portal, because of the regulations, you know, you change your roster yearly or monthly.
Right. Yeah.
So it's hard to really build. And, you know, we try to talk to kids about and agents about multi-year deals. And to their perspective, a lot of times it really doesn't make sense because, you know, if a kid has a good year, they can test the market and get the following year and make more money. Hopefully, if this 5-on-5 rule comes into play and you only have the one-time transfer exception, mm-hmm, maybe you have a little bit more stability in building rosters over a 2- and 3-year period, but it's still going to be some upheaval.
Yeah, that's a great point. If they go to 5-for-5 and other things that they could implement, maybe it's more incentive for a player to sign a multi-year deal. But more than likely, they're going to want to test the market, as you said, Coach, and that makes it very hard on every single coach out there. I don't care if they're power conference coaches or not, to put together the rosters. Aki Collins, former Memphis Tiger assistant coach, joining us on the Sissy's Log Cabin guest line now at the University of Maryland. So you're an assistant coach and the director of player personnel. Do you guys have a general manager per se, or are you the GM, or how does the dynamics work in putting together your big board of portal guys that you're going to go after?
That's a really good story. So a question. So when Coach took the job, we didn't have an athletic director. And so it was a GM for all sports. And so Coach did not want to try to force a GM in because he didn't have a boss, essentially. So he asked me, he goes, listen, you're going to be the de facto GM. Is there another title that you would like until we could get this thing situated? And I said, all right, name me the director of player personnel. I'll do all the GM work. He goes, I know you don't really want to coach for me. I said, yeah, we've been down that road. We've had a lot of success, but you and I both will try to strangle each other at some point. So, yeah, this is kind of what I'm doing. And I had kind of started morphing into that when I was at Overtime. I did all the NIL stuff for us there. So it was the way I kind of wanted my career to proceed a little bit. So, that's how I became the director of player personnel. He told me he had to name me an assistant so I could go on the road and recruit as well. So that's how my title came to fruition. But I essentially do communicate with our GM. Like, I'll send him what our numbers are and have him write up the contracts and stuff. But negotiating it, getting the players and all that stuff falls on my lap.
So without having the AD, and then Buzz brings you in with this dual position, basically, but more so on the player acquisition side. How did you know, and how do you know what the budget is? And certainly you're not going to divulge that information, but how, if there was no AD, how did they know how much money they had to spend on players? And how hard is that?
We got an AD probably a week after.
Okay.
I accepted the job.
Okay.
So he actually was down here with the Atlanta Braves, and so he took the job, and so he and I have a really good relationship.
Oh, wow.
I can call him or call his assistant and say, Chris, I need to talk to Mr. Smith. And he'll tell me this other day, he said, hey, he'll be ready at 1:45. Can you come over? I said, yes.
Yeah, but how good of a friend is he if you say, I need another million for the we'll see how good a friend he is.
We haven't had that conversation. He came over, we talked, and we talked about the roster. And he goes, you know what this means? I said, yes, we're going to have to raise some more money. Mm-hmm. And he goes, as long as you realize that. So he's worked with us. He's been really good. He understands that. So like, so we had an awful season by anybody's standards, especially Maryland standards. And so we have to be good. And he's given us the leeway and the flexibility to go out and do what we need to do to try to acquire the players that we need to be successful.
With that, you mentioned raising more money. How much of that, the money raising, falls on the coach's side of you guys, and how much is it just at the AD and the athletic department level?
You know, I think there's a partnership. I've been to a number of events. I had to go to an event on the 13th up in New York, and it's just with boosters and things like that. Just giving people access can help raise money. They want to know what you're doing. They want to know what our team is looking like. They want some inside scoops that we can provide to them. And, you know, if they're going to invest into the program, we have to be willing to grant that access, and we've done that. Probably a little bit more than Coach is probably comfortable with. Like, he's really good in big in crowds and speaking to people, but, like, on his way to it, he'll complain about it. Like, I don't want to do this, I want to do this. And then you can't get him to be quiet. Like, Coach, we're supposed to be here at half an hour. We're here for 2 hours. So,
well, okay.
It's been a good experience, though.
All right, so let me ask you this. Again, I'm not asking about what Maryland's budget is. I'm asking you about what you think, and this is your – maybe you know, or just your opinion. How much money does it take – to be up there right now with the Michigans, the Connecticuts, and the teams that are the perennial top five, top tens right now during this transfer portal NIL era? How much budget do you think to be that good do you need for a basketball program?
All right, I'm going to answer that in two parts.
Okay.
If you want to be the elite of the elite, it's a different number than what I'm getting ready to tell you.
Okay.
If you want to be in contention, top 20, you know, have a chance to make it the second weekend in the NCAA tournament, upset somebody and go a little bit further. If you're not spending $14-15 million, you're not in the conversation.
Whoa, man.
Yeah, and it was supposed, we thought it all was going to go down this year, and the prices have just gone out of the roof. You know, the team that won it this year, Michigan, reportedly spent $21 million on their roster last year. Now, to me, none of this makes sense, because I asked the football guy how much you had to spend just to be competitive in the Big Ten, and he told me $24 million.
What?
The bare minimum. Okay, and so I'm like, okay, that's $14-15 million on the basketball side, and you're talking easily $40-something million a year for your two power sports. On the men's side, to be competitive and have a championship-level team, we can't continue going in this direction.
No.
There has to be some regulation. I don't know, like, I don't know where you get $40 million every year.
Yeah.
And if I did, trust me, I wouldn't be coaching.
Well, it seems like, Aki, it seems like that the schools that have the big booster/boosters that are willing to give them the big money. I'm talking about the oil magnets, and we saw what Texas Tech is doing. And it seems like if you have that Indiana and the connection with Cuban and all, it seems like if you have those guys in your pocket, then there's going to be that extra money on top of everything else you've raised to be able to do what you need to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, you know, they try to implement rules with the rev share. I don't think you put a team together just on rev share. You have to do something else.
Yeah, I agree.
And to me, I think they just need to have, just like the NBA, a salary cap, and you can't go over it, whether it be rev share or third party. Like, this is the number, and this is what it has to be. Now, you're going to have every agent in America trying to fight that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, on the collegiate side, agents aren't regulated. So, whereas in the NBA, the most they can get is 4% of a contract. You know, in college, I know guys are getting 10-20% on contracts, which that's a whole other story.
So,
but they can do it. So,
mm-hmm, right.
That's what you got going on right now.
You mentioned, you know, again, you've got to try and find this $40 million basically every year. When you are out there, as you said, trying to raise money, like, are the boosters, the people you're asking for some money, are they, like, frustrated by it? Or, like, well, seriously, like, how do you guys keep asking us for more? Or do they understand it? Like, what is the reaction you get when you're out there constantly trying to raise this money?
Well, for me, and I'm literally on the outside, on the peripheral, trying to assist us to get these dollars. I haven't faced much resistance. But it's our first year.
Yeah.
At least in my first year, essentially, doing this with the program. So, you know, the insight I can provide, I think, is welcome from our boosters. And I kind of stay away from asking for the big money. Yeah. Like, if I need to ask somebody for money, I will. But we have a team that does that. I just give them insight into what's going on mm-hmm. with the basketball program. So far, I haven't faced much resistance, but I know I will probably face some resistance next year. But it also depends on what kind of season we have.
Yeah. Well, and it also, I mean, again, like, as you said, you think it's going to go down and then it goes up. And it's like, is it going to go up again next year? Like, where does it end? When does it finally peak and start maybe coming down a little bit or level off at least to where, okay, this is where we're at. And if it just keeps going up year after year after year, again, at some point, you just keep weeding more and more teams out.
Yeah. And that part, and unfortunately, the Olympic sports probably suffer first.
Sure. Yes,
because
sure.
you have to pay and make sure men's, women's basketball are fine and football obviously is taken care of. So I think when people stop looking out for themselves and their daily money grab and start looking at the health of college athletics, we'll be in a better place. I don't know if we'll ever get there, but I'm optimistic that at some point in time somebody's gonna step in and say, okay, enough is enough. Let's regulate this. Because we're getting ready to destroy it.
How?
The model can't stay the same.
No, it can't. There's no sustainability. I don't know. I don't see it imploding necessarily, but there's going to be some problems, some ramifications from it all. Aki Collins yes. joining us. He's a coach and director of player personnel at the University of Maryland, former Memphis Tiger assistant coach. How crazy does it get? And this is just a general question. When you're recruiting or other coaches that you know are recruiting, and there are guys out there that were 2 point per game scorers, 10th guy, 9th guy off the bench, whatever, and they're demand, like, how outlandish does it get with the money they're demanding?
It gets crazy. I'll tell a quick story. So one of our assistant coaches was talking to a kid and his representative. He kind of gave me an insight as to what they were looking for, but we had heard one number and then it kind of fluctuated a little bit. So by the time I talked to the rep, he says to me, he goes, we think his value is $1.5 million. So I kind of paused on the phone. I said, well, you and I have a different idea of what his value is. I said, this is what I can do. And I'll send you the documentation. You let me know if it suits you, and if not, we'll go a different way. I sent him this. He said, thank you, and I never heard from him again. And I was perfectly fine with that. And I, Coach and I, we're on the same page with all of this. And so when I found out their initial number, I knew I was going to say no, but I had already run it by a coach, and he goes, the value is what you think it is, and we're not going to go higher than that.
Did the player resurface? Fine. Somewhere else?
Yeah.
For that
money? He ended up going to a Big 12 school. I don't know how much he ended up getting, but for us, his value was a certain number, and we always have a walk-away number. Like, if they ask for too much, we'll just walk away.
Right. Makes sense.
And because part of it, like, Coach is still who he was when we worked together at Marquette. Like, he wants guys that want to be in the program for the right reason, want to get better. We have a track record of putting guys in the NBA. The 4 years we were together, we have 11 guys that have collected an NBA check off those 14.
Nice.
All right. So, like, I'm not saying we're walking in like we're, big man on campus, but we do have a track record. And then he's put some guys in. I've had guys go in the league from my various stops. So if you want to come to University of Maryland, we want you to value the experience, value the development, and obviously we got to pay you. But if your number one reason for coming to Maryland is that we have the biggest bag, what we do and how we do things, it probably not going to work for you. And so we stayed true to who we were prior to the bags being thrown around, and I think that's why we're having success in the portal right now and on the recruiting trail with high school kids.
It's funny because we actually was kind of joking about this the other day, but like when you – like do kids on visits now, like is it even – like do they even tour facilities? Do they care what your facilities are, or just say, how much money do you have to give me?
We have one of the newest practice facilities in the country just opened up in August. Opened up a week after I took the job. And we kind of all joke about it. Like, this may be the last one that's built. Because kids don't care about that anymore.
Yeah, I guess they
care about the bag.
Where's your conference room? I don't care about the practice court. Where's the conference room where we can sit down and negotiate? That's all that matters about your facility.
Yeah, I have a 17-year-old. He just turned 17 on Monday. He's a junior, and then I got a 14-year-old that just turned 14, beginning of April. And I keep looking at them like, man, I need you guys to either get better or grow up faster. I don't be the guy that negotiates your NIL deal. Trust me. I'll make sure we all taken care of.
Oh, my gosh. Last thing before we let you go, and we thank you so much, Coach, for giving us some of your time. We know you're busy, but you spent a lot of years here, 3 years in Memphis, right? You know Memphis, and it has been last year was rough. A couple years ago was fine. Last year was rough. You know Penny, and it's not that easy anymore when Penny could just roll out his name. I mean, everybody wants to play for Penny, but now, like you said, show me the bag. How tough is it going to be for Memphis? You know they've tried to get into a power conference. They were shot down by the Big 12. Hopefully it'll happen one day. But how tough is it going to be for Memphis? I'm not talking about in equal value with the American Conference and other smaller conferences. I'm talking about to be up there and battling the big boys, which they have done for many, many decades. How tough is it going to be moving forward?
Well, I think the challenge for Penny and his staff is most cities go through this, where the talent in the city runs in cycles. Anytime Memphis has been really, really good outside of the Calipari years, they had a lot of homegrown talent. And so when you have homegrown talent and then supplement it with one or two or three stars from outside, when you're at the University of Memphis, it makes it really makes it a lot easier to have success.
Mm-hmm.
My first year there with Josh, we might have like 10 guys from Memphis. We had Chris. We had Joe, we had Tariq. You know, we had a core group, Adonis. We had a core group of Memphians. And so we were going to be good because there's pride in being a Tiger when you're from Memphis. I think, and it's not to take the pressure off of Penny, I think the more they get local kids that are elite players, the easier it's going to be for them to maintain their status or get back to that elite level.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's so hard at Memphis because of the conference that you can't go out and get 10 stars from all over the country.
Right.
It's just too hard because the playing field is now even – look at the Blue Bloods. You got a lot of Blue Bloods that are struggling now because they relied on their name. Well, that name does nothing now when you can legally pay people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is not, I'm saying what I'm saying, and I'm not taking a shot. I've heard this, and it makes sense to me. At one point in time, the SEC was the premier conference. Now it's the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Why? We all know the rumors, what used to happen in the SEC. I'm not saying it did happen or it didn't happen. I'm just pointing out the fact that now the Big Ten is the best conference in college basketball and even in college football. So, for me, if I'm sitting in the chair at the University of Memphis, I'm meeting with all the high school coaches and the grassroots coaches and middle school coaches and trying to make sure that we're developing the homegrown talent, not just guys that are really good basketball players or athletically talented. Like, we got to teach these kids how to play so that we can play at a high level and we can keep those kids home. And now we have a chance to get back mm-hmm. to national prominence.
Well said. He is he's fantastic. He's been around the game for a long time, and he knows the game. He's Aki Collins, Maryland assistant coach, director of player personnel, former Memphis Tiger assistant. Follow him on Twitter at CoachAK40. I'm so busy with the Tigers, but, man, I want to get back to Maryland and see a game, and if that happens, I'll look you up. But hopefully we get to have you on again maybe during the season, Coach. Really appreciate it. Have a great summer.
Thank you. Let me know, and I'll get you tickets when you're in town, man.
Oh, sounds great, Coach. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, fellas.
Take care. Aki Collins joining us on the program. You're tuned in to Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Add a little fun to your lunch break. Join Johnny Radio
for Sports 56 Happy Hour from 11 to 1 every weekday on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now back to Sports 56 Mornings on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. This hour is brought to you by James Gattis Jewelers.
To reveal the full spectrum of its dazzling color.
Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
That's a pretty amazing number he threw out there.
Shocked me. It shocked me.
You know, because 10 million's kind of been the number that people have talked about. That's kind of the... Almost the minimum that you kind of need to be competitive. Now, he's talking top 20 type competitive, $14, $15 million range. And they said, if you want to be the elite of the elite, it's even more than that. So I don't know, like, if you're, you know, really competing for championships, what is it? We're talking $20 million for a basketball roster at the college level? I mean, I don't know. It's just weird. Like, last night, Tyron Stokes did his commitment on the inside the NBA and the pregame last night. And as he's sitting there and he's thanking his sponsors and he's handing out his basketball cards to Chuck and Shaq. I'm like, this is a high school kid. Like, what world am I living in? He's thanking his sponsors. He's thanking his agent. He's handing out his basketball card to the guys on the desk as he commits to college. I'm like, it's just such a bizarro.
It is.
And bizarro world. I wonder what he's making. Number one player in the country. I wonder what he's going to make in the 1 year of college basketball that he's going to play.
Again,
he's got these other sponsors because he has the card sponsor with Panini. And who was the other sponsor?
I didn't see another sponsor.
I can't remember who that was. On top of the whatever,
yeah, but nobody should be surprised.
Whatever Kansas is giving him on other deals, I wonder what the number one player in the country out of high school costs right now. Is he $5 million? I don't even know what that might be.
I'm sure it's somewhere near $5 million. But to the point that you made about Aki, what Aki had to say, and Aki was fantastic. If you're just tuning in, you're going to need to listen to that interview. As he said, you can't just have rev share. You have to have a lot more that goes to these players through NIL. And to be a top 20 team, to be a second weekend team, he said, you need to spend $14 to $15 million. Memphis is nowhere near $14 to $15 million for basketball. They're probably a third of the way there to that number. And he also emphasized the local guys. And what did Memphis do? They went out and they got some local guys. How impactful they'll be in their first year, who knows? And then who knows if they'll be able to retain those players if they have big years, or maybe they're not used and they want to go somewhere else. It is a dilemma that faces these coaches every single year. But also what Aki emphasized was there has to be some forms of regulation that are put into play. If not, we continue escalating these amounts of money as opposed to evening it out or lowering it. It can't continue to grow. It's almost like the worth of a NBA franchise or an NFL franchise or baseball. They just continue to grow, these franchises, and their worth continue to grow. It appreciates. And I don't know. Right now there's no end in sight, to be honest with you, but Aki made an awful lot of sense. But that was jarring to hear that. $14-15 million just to be second weekend guys, top 20 type basketball teams. And can Memphis ever get to that number? Can they ever get close and to be in that range? Or can they be that type of team within a $5 million budget or so? It seems like it's highly unlikely, because these players, again, they know their value. Some will overestimate their value and they'll be called on it, but it is just a different world. All right, when we come back, the hits just keep on coming. Super agent Lee Steinberg and then DeMichael Cole. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
You have opinions?
I think it's over.
Of course you do.
I don't think it's that simple.
Everyone does.
I got all the answers.
Hit us up on the Sissy's Log Cabin listener line at 360-8255.